As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, The Athletic's dedicated Newcastle United podcast. Happy New Year to you all. I hope it's been a good one. And Happy New Year to you, George Colgan, and you, Chris Wolf. George, you alright? Have you had a canny break?
No.
Oh, brilliant. It's a good way to start.
Yeah, no. For the second Christmas out of three, I was in my sick bed, Taylor, so I missed all of Christmas in terms of opening presents and eating nice food. So I was a bit grumpy. My Christmas was about as good as Newcastle United's.
Well, so shit then, in other words.
Absolutely, yeah, shit. Pretty shit. I did one nice thing before Christmas. I sat in on a lovely interview between Alan Shearer and Steve Harper.
Oh, yes.
Steve Harper, who'd had his health scare in September, but is now back at work at Newcastle's Academy, and the two of them chatting about friendship and what had happened to Steve. So did bits of that. Maybe we'll play some clips of that somewhere down the line, but yeah, great to see Steve back healthy again. I just wish that I'd been.
Absolutely, yeah. How about you, Chris? Have you been all right? How was the WAF family Christmas?
Yes, we're all right, thank you. James had a bit of illness over Christmas as well, but he's much improved now. So yeah, it's just been affecting everyone. Everyone's been a little bit under the weather. I had to pick up the with George away, then I had to pick up the slack between Christmas and New Year, and unfortunately, I couldn't. Hold Newcastle United aloft. They obviously fell off a cliff themselves. But how are you, Till? You'd still sound a bit under the weather.
Yeah, I've had like a chest thing. I think, you know, like them things off Alien that eventually come bursting out of your upper body. I think that's what I've got. Something like that, probably. But I'm going to go at the docks on Friday and you'll give us some tablets for it and it'll go away on its own, I'd imagine.
That'll kill a little alien, will it?
Yeah, definitely.
So we're all a bit sickly.
We are. We're a bit poorly sick. But, you know, it's one of those, isn't it? This is the time of year for this, isn't it?
I suppose it is.
It's the season chewiness, of goodwill. Yeah, we're all about chewiness.
The season of hacking your lungs up in a toilet somewhere. Yeah. Listener, David Wright, asked if we are thinking of this podcast as similar to a UK government emergency Cobra committee. This is definitely more of a Stella Artois meeting, but we'll most likely have a curry afterwards, wouldn't we? That sounds about right.
I mean, I would like to think that no matter how hapless and incompetent we get, and obviously we do get both of those things,
yeah,
we could not be as incompetent and as hapless as the government.
Possibly not, no, I don't think so.
I mean, yeah. Surely.
Thanks a lot, bit of politics. Good night!
I also hope that Newcastle United would not actually call on us for our opinions on whatever issues were going on.
Well, it is our job to sort of give our opinions. I mean, that's the job of this podcast.
It doesn't mean they need to listen to them.
It's literally what we've signed up for, Chris. Absolutely. Right then, shall we crack on, chaps?
Let's do it.
Come on in.
Come on, you Maggies.
Eddie Howe's knackered Mags have played three games since we last convened. A defeat at Liverpool was expected, to be honest, wasn't it? Even if the manner of the defeat could be a bit alarming. The mood has been altered more, though, by the defeat at Luton and, most importantly, at home against Nottingham Forest. It all went hell in a handcart, George, didn't it, over that couple of weeks?
So when I sent Chris a message about 8 o'clock on Boxing Day saying, sorry about this, bit short notice, but don't think I'm going to make it. What a great decision that was on my behalf.
Bit of blame.
I did feel terrible then sitting. I was in my bed, but watching a bit of that on my tablet. It was like, oh, no. The Luton game is one thing. The Liverpool game is another. But, you know, we're just so used to seeing Newcastle be so strong at home. And then to see that was a big shock, I think.
Yeah.
They're in a terrible run of form. There's no denying that, is there? There's no denying that they really are having a tough time of it. So, yeah, it was a good one to miss, I would say.
Yeah, we had some old boys haunting us as well, didn't we? Yeah, obviously Andros Townsend at Luton and Chris Wood for Forest. It pretty much rounded off a miserable December, Chris. We are now apparently officially the worst team in Boxing Day history. That's some stat, isn't it?
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really know that was a thing, but apparently it is a thing. I mean, imagine a lot of Newcastle fans probably, upon hearing those stats, probably thought, oh yeah, actually, yeah, very rarely is a very positive day on Boxing Day. Although, on Boxing Day 2022... Newcastle United did go second in the Premier League, won 3-0 at Leicester City, and the first player who scored that day, Chris Wood from the penalty spot. Now,
that's correct.
Seeing him at St James's Park this Boxing Day, you maybe thought, wow,
what a player.
Newcastle maybe should look for him in January. Player. Scoring treble the amount of goals that he did for Newcastle United in 20 appearances at St James's Park as a Newcastle United player in a solitary game, and that only goal was against Wolves from the penalty spot. But the way that he finished the second one against Martin Dubravka was very, very unlike anything Newcastle fans saw from Chris Wood in a Newcastle shirt, just flicking it over him and scoring. So yeah, that was a difficult day, because I think that although the Luton defeat felt very, very disappointing, but given Newcastle's away form, I don't think that was entirely unexpected. Going into Boxing Day, what was the one thing that Newcastle really had to still fall back on, having gone out of the Champions League, having been knocked out in those circumstances in the Carabao Cup? It was the home form. They were almost imperious at home, bar the final 20 minutes against Liverpool early in the season. They had a 100% record beyond that. They actually take the lead against Nottingham Forest, have the opportunity maybe to go 2-0 up, Miguel Almiron's in the box, decision making, and then Newcastle just don't defend the entire situation, concede right on the stroke of half time, and that second half against Nottingham Forest was very, very poor. And it was the manner, I think, of the way Newcastle collapsed, because they hadn't fallen behind home since the Liverpool game, but the way they collapsed and then couldn't get back into it, that was, I think, the very disappointing thing.
It felt like that a bit, didn't it, George, that Forest game, the Chris is saying the manner of it. And I think a lot of fans who I've spoken to were more bothered about the manner of the defeat than the actual defeat. I think it was the way that Newcastle went about it. And they did just fold in on themselves, didn't they?
I mean, that is one of the concerns, is that they've become a bit of a soft touch. And that's a pretty startling thing to say when you think about how good they were defensively last season, when you think about sort of at their best, how aggressive they are and how much on the front foot. But they've got an absolutely terrible record when they go a goal behind, and they've got an absolutely terrible record away from home. There's no denying both of those things. And it always felt to me like they're piling pressure on themselves at home, because that was what was keeping the season afloat. And I mean, it's kind of quite remarkable that the things that we were praising them for a year ago, resilience, defiance, bouncing back, all of those things have kind of gone out of the window. But
yeah,
it has to be arrested, and it has to be arrested really soon.
Somebody said to me on Monday night, we've not been the same since we stopped as much shithousing as we used to do. And it seems like we're not being canny in these games anymore. We're not being as aggressive.
Yeah. I mean, if you're talking about AC Milan, for example, at home, you're talking about Newcastle not being able to see games out. And, you know, when it really mattered, or even Chelsea in the League Cup that I was there for, when they did, you know, they defended very well for a long period of time, but then made that terrible error. We were praising them for doing whatever it took to see games out. Now, I don't know whether that's just a byproduct of, you know, the situations they find themselves in. I don't want to use this sort of tiredness as an excuse, but it feels like they're getting to the end of matches. And whereas in the past, they would be able to bring on fresh players and that would give them fresh urgency, fresh impetus, and maybe that sort of extra bit of concentration, they're now allowing that sort of focus to fade a bit, and they're making big mistakes. But it is a complete sea change.
And Liverpool, as we said Monday night, they made merry, didn't they? A monumental XG figure. But was it ever so slightly misleading, Chris. Newcastle were improved in some areas, weren't they?
They were improved in some areas, but I think it's difficult to argue that the highest ever expected goals for a side of 7.27 as it was that Liverpool had. So basically what that means is the quality of the chances that Liverpool had were of a value where they'd be expected more often than not to score 7.27 goals across the course of a match. Obviously they score four. The previously highest score was 5.87, which both Man City got against Watford in 2019 and Liverpool got against Leeds last season, or two seasons ago, I think.
What were the scores in those games?
Man City scored 8 against Watford and Liverpool scored 6 against Leeds. I don't know what the final scores were actually, but they were the actual number of goals that they scored. So they scored more than Liverpool managed to against Newcastle on this occasion. And you take out the two penalties, which account for a significant value of it. Even if you discount those, they're still within the top 3 or 4 ever XG scored again. And I think the problem was the Newcastle were improved in some areas in terms of they offered an attacking threat. Alexander Isak took his goal very well. Botman obviously scores from the set piece. There were other openings that Newcastle had. They had the Burn goal disallowed for offside. There'd been other moments. But every time Liverpool went forward, it seemed like they were going to get an opportunity. And Martin Dubravka made some wonderful saves. He also made some quite unorthodox saves, which I don't think were necessarily fully convincing. But you can't have a go-to goalkeeper who makes that volume of saves and was undoubtedly Newcastle's man of the match. But it's not. It was also the fact that it's not just this Liverpool game. It's like a trend which has been going on. So since the start of November, no side has a higher number of expected goals conceded across all those matches. They've gone above Spurs in that point now. Now, I know a lot of people come back to me and stats and say these are goals conceded, but Newcastle still conceded 18 goals during that time. They have conceded that they've conceded significantly more this season than they had at this period last year. That's despite having the joint highest number of clean sheets in the Premier League. But beyond that, they are just conceding goals and look like a soft touch. When they concede once, they tend to concede several. And that is what's a real concern. And so Eddie Howe came out afterwards. I asked him specifically about the XG stat. He sort of came back and said, I didn't actually think we were that open. Now, he's saying that in the immediate aftermath of the match. But having sat there at Anfield and watched it, I don't think he could necessarily argue that. Now, before the game itself, I was speaking to a few people inside Newcastle. And I'd said to one of them, I said, I'll be honest with you, I'm not looking forward to going to Anfield on a New Year's Day. It's not my idea of how I would like to spend New Year's Day going there for an 8 p.m. kickoff. And I realise I'm privileged to go in there. I get the opportunity to go there for my job, but it's the trip which I hate doing because it's a game where you feel it's a wasted trip because the same happens every year for Newcastle. But even given that the manner at which Liverpool, particularly for the Jota penalty, now we can get into the ins and outs of the Jota penalty should have been. I don't think it should have been, but if you take yourself away from the spot kick situation and look. One ball goes through the entire Newcastle defence, which at that stage is a back five, and Liverpool are away into gaping holes. Now, I know Newcastle are trying to go to attack and get back into the game, but that was sort of emblematic of the issues Newcastle have had and are increasingly having, and seemingly the answers haven't been found yet. That's why I think there's a lot of concern at the moment.
They've conceded 3 goals or more 4 times in the last 6 games in the Premier League. I mean, that really just speaks for itself, doesn't it?
I feel like I've been watching the same game of football for the last 2 months. I just feel like, I might be a simplistic way of looking at it, but every game has the same sort of feeling about it. And, you know, it just you can tell that they're running on empty and, you know, we've talked about the injuries and stuff and the fitness for a long time, but something needs to change. Something definitely needs to change. There may be a bit of pressure on Eddie Howe. There may not be, we're not sure, but we can largely sort of dismiss the paper talk. There's a very small minority of fans who are starting to turn. But what's the mood inside the club, George? What's the sort of feeling?
The first thing you have to say is that there is pressure on Eddie Howe, but there's also pressure on Dan Ashworth, there's pressure on Amanda Staveley, there's pressure on everyone. They've put pressure on themselves. I mean, they've done that with the timescale they've set out to be challenging for everything. And, you know, they all embrace that and they all welcome that. In terms of relationships inside the club, they're incredibly strong. I mean, you know, perhaps this wouldn't mean very much if things, you know, carry on the way they are, but they're friends. You know, they're not just kind of very close colleagues. They're friends. They're very, very tight. They're very close. They've got these very, very strong working and also personal relationships, they're mm-hmm. all in it together. And everything that I've been told about the people who run the club on a, you know, on a daily basis is that they're doing whatever they can. They want to do whatever they can to help the head coach, to help the players. They understand the context. They understand that they're ahead of schedule and that they've been incredibly stretched by injury, suspension to Sandro Tonali and all the rest of it. And they're just trying to find a way through it. And that message is consistent. It's very strong. You know, the thing that we've always said as a sort of caveat is that, does that mean there couldn't be a kind of brain fart from Riyadh and things change and someone says this isn't good enough and so we need to bring in Pep Guardiola as manager or, you know, whatever? No, we can't, you know, we can't completely dismiss that because the club hasn't been tested by real adversity since the takeover happened or since they got out of the relegation zone. So you have to do that. Now, when you talk to Newcastle about that, they come back to the word that they use right at the start. If we go back a couple of years, they all talked about alignment and they said, no, everybody is aligned. There's no division between what we think here to what the Public Investment Fund in Saudi think too. And that is definitely the message that they're giving, that there's no, you know, there's... You know, there's no sort of uneasiness with how they love him. They want him to succeed. But to then also repeat what you said, Taylor, they do have to start winning matches. So Howe has been absolutely brilliant. I'll repeat the thing that I've said podcast after podcast. He's the best thing that's happened to Newcastle for a very long time. So fingers crossed he gets to turn it around. I'm sure he will.
Absolutely. Chris, there's a tweet here from someone called Malcolm MacDonald. I'm presuming that's not his real name. It came through on Twitter. I don't get the panic. We're ninth with a squad currently who'd be ninth under normal circumstances. There's been very little normalcy about this season. Why do people believe we aren't allowed to lose games?
No, I understand that. It's very hard to... when you're within the sort of eye of the storm, it's very hard to plead... perspective and to try and look at those that sort of situation and I mean the issue Newcastle have last season was an overperformance, not in terms of that Newcastle didn't deserve to be where they were. They very much deserved to be where they were on in terms of what they did, but there was a recognition this season was always going to be difficult. Now that it's all come almost at once, that until the start of December. You look back a few weeks ago and we were talking about that Manchester United victory and how wonderful that was for Newcastle and the form they were in then. It's everything has come in such quick succession because Newcastle have had so many games and because they've gone out of the Champions League, followed quickly by going out of the Carabao Cup and the circumstances that they did. And then it's been the manner of some of those defeats and it feels like everything's catching up on one another. They managed to, despite having this injury crisis throughout most of November and the start of December, they managed to still find a way to win a lot of matches. But that has all come to a head. Fatigue has set in. The relationships within the team have become fractured. And I don't mean that in terms of negatively them warring with each other. What I mean is in terms of on the pitch, the understanding isn't quite there as it was before. And what was one of the key reasons why Newcastle were much improved during the first 18 months of Eddie Howe's time here is because of the time that he had on the training ground. Now, they haven't had that.
Yes.
They now are going to have that from this period on. And there needs to be an improvement in that regard. You need to be able to see the defence improve. You need to be able to see those attacking relationships improve again. Newcastle have maybe become a little bit predictable, aren't scoring enough goals, or at least they aren't getting enough players contributing enough goals. I agree with Malcolm MacDonald to a certain extent, Super Mac, whoever it may be who has messaged in there. but I also think that you have to recognise the situation Newcastle find themselves in. I also think it's the fear of what's to come, not only this weekend, but also for the rest of this month, and the idea that maybe things aren't necessarily going to get better. Newcastle are already ninth, but they're closer to 16th than they are to fourth place in the Premier League. And I think that's part of the concern. It's so much context within there, and it's hard to take a step back and look at it and see the sort of positive wider picture. Because when you're in the very, very meat of it, as Newcastle are now, it does feel quite negative. It does look quite bleak.
Yeah, I would take issue with the word panic. I don't think there's any panic from what I've seen. I mean, obviously, you know, if you look at social media, then the world is always in flames. I mean,
everything's on fire. Yeah,
yeah. Of course, that's just the way it is. And then during matches, you know, it's the same as being in a match, and someone makes a mistake, and you scream at the pitch. But you know, when the final whistle comes, you all cheer and applaud the team. I mean, you know, so you see that on social media and stuff. But you know, Newcastle have lost seven out of their last 8 matches in all competitions if you take the Chelsea game as a defeat, which it was. So
Steve Bruce would have called it a draw, but yeah.
Steve Bruce would have been happy with a clean sheet, yeah.
It wasn't a clean sheet, though.
No, okay, fine. But the Burnley game, he talked about that. And, you know, that's the difference. That's, you know, that is the context for the unhappiness now. We were talking then about a club where the manager was praising his team for keeping a clean sheet in a match that they'd gone out of a competition in. Yeah. And now we're expecting that team or wanting that team to win trophies, to challenge for trophies. And they've set their own standards, and those standards are very, very high. They know themselves they're not meeting that standards. We know that there's a huge amount of, you know, if not excuses, then reasons for why they found it tough. But equally, it's not been good enough. I mean, I think we have to be allowed to say both of those things. It's like, I feel bad for them. They've given everything. They're a brilliant team. They're a great squad, but they've been stretched to bits. And then ultimately, they've lost confidence, they've lost form, and they're not playing like we know they can play. And that's, you know, that isn't good enough.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
A big chunk of fans, Chris, they're asking the club hierarchy to back Eddie Howe in the transfer market, aren't they? What sort of role does Eddie Howe have in the recruitment process, and to what extent can we bring players in with current limitations?
Well, Eddie Howe has the final say on all transfers. No players are signed without Eddie Howe wanting them to be. So all of the signings who have come in post-takeover, obviously Eddie Howe was appointed in the November of 2021. All the windows since he has brought in all of those players. Now, by having the final say, that doesn't necessarily mean that every single one of those players was his very first choice at that moment. As we know, in the January 2022 window, Sven Botman was the first choice centre-back. They eventually signed him the following summer, but Dan Byrne came in as the next sign. But again, Eddie Howe wanted him. He was his choice. But you also have Dan Ashworth, who is the sporting director. He ratifies deals, he finalises them and concludes them. But you have Steve Nixon, who's the head of recruitment, and Andy Howe, who is, I think, is the head of technical scouting or something, is his exact position. And they basically identify players, they speak to agents as well. But basically, in the end, finally, it comes down to the players who Eddie Howe wants, but that's on the basis of the budget that he has and the players that are available. Now, going into this January, can you feel people rolling their eyes? I can feel people rolling their eyes if you can do that, just listening to this next bit I'm about to say. But financial fair play, or the Premier League's profit and sustainability rules, as they are called officially, are an issue for Newcastle. They are very close to the limit on that front, and that is going to restrict what they can do this month. That doesn't mean they won't do anything, and Eddie Howe is certainly pushing behind the scenes to try and do something, but it looks increasingly like it will be loans, be they straight loans, be they loans with options or loans with obligations. They only actually have one further domestic loan unless they turn Lewis Hall's deal into a permanent deal in before the end of the season. As things stand, that only becomes a permanent deal this summer. So for now, they would only have one domestic deal, one of which they would like, and who player they have a lot of interest in is Manchester City's Calvin Phillips, midfielder, to come in. They've liked him long term. He isn't getting the game time there. Obviously, England international, highly rated, albeit he hasn't played much football at all at Manchester City. But that is a difficult deal to do at the moment. It isn't close in the sense that Newcastle are going to be able to announce that next few days. And it is looking like it's going to be later in the window before Newcastle can do anything in that regard, because that tends to be when loans happen as well.
Yeah, you tend to think, though, don't you, with these, like, if Manchester City get a couple of injuries, they're not going to want to release Calvin Phillips on loan, are they? Say if Rodri got an injury or somebody like that, suddenly their whole window has to change. You know, they're not going to want to get rid of a player.
No, I mean, that's, you know, Newcastle aren't in the position of strength in that sense if you're relying on other teams for loans. And, you know, perhaps it's in, you know, Manchester City's interest to wait and see what's what. I mean, the mood music that's coming from City is that they're sympathetic to Calvin Phillips's position and, you know, would look to help him if the right move came along. But you're right, it's not Newcastle's position where they can dominate or, you know, or force something to happen.
They'll do what's best for Manchester City, won't they?
Exactly. They're effectively relying on the goodwill of another club.
And also, Chris, as well, we've got Sir Jim Ratcliffe now, who's in charge of football operations at Manchester United. And the rumours of a move for Dan Ashworth, they've stepped up a few notches as well, haven't they? Does that have any kind of impact on Newcastle's January business? Could it put complications in the way?
Well, in the very short term, it shouldn't. I mean, the Sir Jim Ratcliffe investment into Manchester United is in theory going to be going through, but the suggestion is it could take another 4 weeks or so. So that basically takes out the whole of January, and the likelihood is they're not going to make any key moves for personnel, such as a position for sporting director, until after then. So Dan Ashworth is almost certainly going to be in position throughout the rest of January. Beyond that, we wait and see. I mean, Newcastle would want significant compensation for him. He would likely have a period of garden leave as well. And that's even if Ineos and Manchester United do actually make an approach. Now, at the minute, there's been no official approach to Newcastle. There hasn't been an approach to Dan Ashworth officially either. It's very much in a situation where, at the moment, he is Newcastle's sporting director and he is conducting Newcastle's business. He is still fully focused on that role. I know some supporters are a bit perturbed by the fact that he hasn't come out and sort of distanced himself. I suppose his counter-argument to that would be there has been no approach. Why? How can I come out and deny something that isn't there? But it just adds, I suppose what it does do is it adds to the uncertainty around the situation at Newcastle at the minute, given the issues on the field right now, and given the fact that they would ideally, supporters believe, and Eddie Howe himself seemingly believes, that they need to do business this month, and that it'd be at least a question mark over the sporting director's long-term future is not ideal, but I don't see it affecting business actually this month.
No, that would be just the thing that I would say, is that in terms of mood music, it's not ideal at a time when, you know, the team's results have been difficult and there's all the sort of uncertainty around the club. In that sense, what you want is that feeling of, you know, serenity and all the rest of it. Now, is Ashworth's position being talked about by people inside the club? Yeah, it definitely is. We know that for a fact. So, you know, you could kind of do without that. You know, I agree with Chris. I don't think it's, you know, having an impact in terms of what they're doing on a day-to-day basis in terms of Ashworth's job, which is, you know, let's not forget, it's very wide-ranging. It's not just about transfers. He's overseeing all football departments at the moment and is, you know, heavily engaged in that and still doing all that. But, you know, at a time when Newcastle could do with a sense of calm, there is that sort of little frisson of uncertainty surrounding his position, which isn't helpful, I would say.
And Chris, what about the injury situation at the moment? Eddie Howe says Wilson and Trippier potentially miss Sunderland and Man City. That's especially concerning with regards to Callum Wilson, isn't it? Do you think we need another option up top?
Well, he's ruled Wilson out of the next two games, which, and this is not me to be too flippant about it, but that tends to mean when Callum Wilson's out, he tends to be out for longer than the season's going to be. So I think seeing him again in January, it would be a positive if he is back this month. Trippier, Howe has said there is a chance he could be back for Sunderland, so he's not definitely ruled out, but still, they're still, as always seems to be the case with Eddie Howe injury updates, Newcastle are waiting to assess finding the assessment of it. That was what he said after
could
the
mean anything, couldn't it?
Exactly. But in terms of the third option up top, I do think Newcastle could do with another attacker. They may, by the end of January, have the likes of Harvey Barnes coming back, and that would give them more options. But at the minute, just across the front line in general, they seem light. They seem light in terms of goals. Anthony Gordon looks shattered.
He does.
Miguel Almiron looks devoid of confidence in many ways. Alexander Isak is scoring goals. Still doesn't look fully fit, I don't think, but he still really is impacting the effect he's had. You can see what a class act he is. But I think ideally, yes, Newcastle would get another attacking player in, be that an out-and-out forward. I think it would be more likely to be an option across the front. But if they don't have much money, which seemingly they don't, or aren't able to spend much money, which seemingly they may not be able to, then that may be difficult for them to do. Can they bring forward some spending they were doing in the summer if there's a player available like there was last year with Anthony Gordon and sort of bring forward a long-term signing. I at this stage, it seems unclear as to whether they can do that. It's going to be a very difficult position to strengthen. But yes, I think they could do with some increased firepower.
I think long-term, absolutely, 100%, it's a position that they have to strengthen. When I say long-term, I mean in the summer. It's easier said than done because it's the position everybody wants to strengthen. Strikers are the players who cost money. But, you know, it's something that Alan from work, has been saying consistently. He would have done it. He would have done it last summer because of the injury record of the two players. And he's proved spot on, sadly. I think Wilson would be a big miss, in particular for the Sunderland game, because I think that's exactly the kind of game you'd want to play him in, where there's that sort of almost certainly going to be that sort of physicality needed. You know, just when he seems to kind of get his match fitness back, he's then out again. It's frustrating, and it's not, you know, they don't have enough options there. I think that's it. I think the thinking was that if both players could prove their fitness, that they would leave themselves with problems in terms of fitting people into the team. And if they'd brought another forward in, another striker in, that would be difficult. But they're just not reliable enough. And, you know, I say that as someone who's got incredible fondness for both players. I think they've been and are really, really good. But there just isn't that robustness that you need to get through a season in which there's been extra matches, of course. So it has to be something that they look for the summer, if not now. And I think the problem with looking now is that it's the most difficult position to fill at the best of times, and January is not the best of times, particularly if you've got no money.
Yeah, do that again. Fucking hell, and you wasn't going to pronounce that right.
Is this a name on several lips, Taylor?
It might be the name on several lips.
It's not on yours, is it?
Seru Gyurassi, is that right, Chris?
I don't know exactly how you pronounce it, but the Stuttgart forward, yes, he has been linked consistently with Newcastle. I know he's a player they've looked at, but whether he is someone they are aiming to sign this month or believe that they can sign this month at this stage, I'll be honest, I'm unsure. It's something I've asked about and I haven't had sort of conclusive response on it, but that's partly because Newcastle haven't still determined what they're going to do this month, because partly due to the injury situation and also partly due to the financial situation as to what can they actually do, what will they do. And going out of the Carabao Cup, although that was a negative, I think it also meant that Newcastle don't have the volume of fixtures this month as they have in previous months. And although you would ideally like players in early this month, you can actually give yourself a little bit longer to work out, rather than sign someone the first week of the window just because you think you have to sign someone, maybe wait a week or two, see who's available and get it later in the month. That's not going to be any positive for supporters out there who want to see players sign. I accept that, but that seems to be the situation they're in right now.
We've got a tweet here as well from Pastor Eric Brown, long-time listener. Which injury/suspension has hurt us the most? And also he said, why were we healthier when Woff was on leave? I'm sure those two things are connected.
It's the Chris Woff, the Woff curse. Is that what it is? I mean, things have turned to shit.
The Woff effect.
I mean, things have turned to shit since Chris has come back. Let's be honest. You know, with Jacob in position, Newcastle qualified for the Champions League.
They did. Always like that, lad.
And then Chris comes back and they crash out of it. And now he's just spreading misery, which I used to think was my sort of domain. He's spreading it like a muck spreader. Spreads muck.
A misery spreader.
A misery spreader.
Yeah.
I was going to respond to the actual question and say, in my opinion, and I think this is the opinion of at least some people inside Newcastle as well, although I've praised him and although I do think he deserves praise, and I'm jumping forward one in our own running order, I do think actually goalkeeper has been a big issue. Now, there were problems already beforehand, but Nick Pope's injury, I think, has significantly changed the way Newcastle play, and I do think part of the defensive issues, not all of them, but at least part of the defensive issues arise from the different style of goalkeeper. Martin Dubravka is a good shot stopper, as we've seen. He's good on his line, but Nick Pope is that sweeper-keeper type. He comes off his line. That allows Newcastle to have the higher defensive line that they've had, and it means that he can cover in behind. At the minute, there doesn't seem to be that connect between the back four and Martin Dubravka. There seems to be a big gap. Certainly you saw it against Nottingham Forest. You saw it at times against Liverpool as well. As brilliant as Dubravka was shot-stopping-wise, I just think it's created problems, and there isn't that relationship that there was with the settled back four and goalkeeper there was for the majority of last season with Dubravka in the defence now. That's not to denigrate what Dubravka brings. I just think it's fundamentally shifted the way Newcastle play.
I totally agree with all of that. And I think that's, as a point, that's fine. I mean, but in terms of injuries and suspension, who's been missed most? Well, I think I would take a step even further back than that. Because one thing that we've not talked about in recent weeks, but we did talk about at the start of the season, is that the players that Newcastle brought in over the summer have not been in the team. I mean, so we've seen bits of Livramento recently and he looks outstanding, but Lewis Hall has barely figured. Harvey Barnes has been injured for a long time, and of course Tonali has been injured.
Suspended.
So not only have Newcastle sort of been dealing with this huge injury list, but before then they were still taking on other teams who've strengthened their first teams this season, and Newcastle were more or less relying on their team from last season, which, you know, albeit was very good, the danger is you get found out a bit, people work out the way you play. And so I think my argument would actually be Tonali, because I think by this point, you know, he would be up to speed with the way Eddie Howe wants to play. There'd be that option in midfield. And I think one of the huge problems that Newcastle have found in recent weeks is not just that the kind of defending seems to have gone to pot, but the protection for the defence has just gone.
Yeah.
It's disappeared. So again, I think I would love to see what Newcastle were able to do with that idea of one of Bruno or Tonali sitting back, the other moving forward, offering a bit of protection around the team. I would say that. I don't know whether that's the right answer or not, but just to be slightly different. I think the fact that Newcastle have not been able to draw upon the players that they signed in the summer, barring here or there, has been massive.
I've made the point of argument for goalkeeper. I accept everything you've said there. I think a lot of injuries have been damaging. Now, on the point about midfield and the lack of a number six signing in the summer, and Eddie Howe coming out and suggesting he doesn't necessarily want a number six this month, although the interest in Calvin Phillips would maybe suggest that actually they do want a player in that position. Part of the logic behind signing Sandro Tonali was that he would primarily be a number eight, would provide some legs in midfield, but then if Bruno Guimarães was unavailable, he would drop deeper into that role. Bruno himself has come out and said that he would like to play as a number eight, but the logic from Newcastle is that he hasn't actually played there that much throughout his career, and when he has tended to play there, he tends to drop deeper anyway because he wants the ball. And so if you bring in a number six to be the deep line midfielder, and if you keep playing the same system, you fundamentally shift what Bruno is going to bring to the side. Now, maybe Newcastle need to do that. Maybe they need to shift to, I'm going to use my favourite term, a double pivot. Maybe they need to move to something like that and change the shape of the side. But that at least was the logic in the summer. And because we haven't seen Sandro Tonali since the start of October, we don't know whether that would have worked in practice. At the moment, that theory hasn't been tested. Lewis Miley has come in and has done very, very well, but he also has had to play a heck of a lot of games in a short space of time,
yeah.
Play at a level which obviously he'd never been at before. And so criticism of him, I think, if there has been any, I don't think there has been much, but if there has been some, I think it's extremely premature, because for him to have played as he has at this level now...
He's been fabulous.
He's been fabulous, I agree.
Yeah, he really has. Right then, shall we move on, chaps?
Yes.
Yes, let's. Before we do that, get yourselves over to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod and pay just $1.99 a month for your first 12 months with The Athletic. Not just George, Chris and the Everton lad. Liam Tharm has been digging into Newcastle's tactics for those of you who like that sort of thing as well. Get yourselves over to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod right now. Well, not right now. Obviously, you want to listen to the rest of this first and then.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You can pause podcast, but yeah, okay.
No, that's silly. Don't pause. It's stupid.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Ah.
an absolutely massive game coming up this weekend, isn't it? And not just because we're on a terrible run of form, not just because we haven't beaten our local rivals in, what, like 500 attempts or something. The most recent victory back in the distant mists of 2011, but also because this competition represents our last realistic chance of silverware for another season, doesn't it, George?
Well, at the moment, it's just like it's the last realistic chance of winning any game of football ever. That's how it sort of feels. It is massive. I mean, Newcastle need to win a match, and this fixture is just a tone setter. It always has been, you know, for both clubs. Usually it's bad reasons for one of them, and they've been, you know, they kind of fight it out in a race to the bottom. And this time they're separated by a division. You know, there's a huge gulf between the teams theoretically, but, you know, Newcastle just know they can't afford to lose this game, you know. And yeah, we've been thinking about this a lot this week, Chris and I, because we've been writing about it, but it does have the capacity to absolutely shape what happens next. You know, when they get a breathing space, it's like, okay, calm down. We've got a tough run of fixtures to come. We know that, but things are going to be okay. If they lose, all hell breaks loose, because that's what happens if you lose a derby. I mean, it just yeah. does. So it's we've had a feeling of dread around the Newcastle team not too long ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. You had that feeling of dread every time you went into the stadium, but not the kind of dread that you get from the derby, which is when it sort of hangs over everything and it's all everybody can talk about. And so it's a sort of reminder of dread. And it's also a reminder of how things can turn to shit if the worst happens. So it's a massive game, massive game.
It's pretty fair to say, Chris, this is a bit of a season-defining fixture, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, I've said this before, and I still maintain that as difficult as all of Newcastle's cup draws have been this season, I think this is the worst of them. I just think that in terms of it didn't look great at the time when they had it, given the volume of fixtures they had and the injuries they had, but in the subsequent weeks since the draw's been made and the way that the season has gone, I just think it just heaps more and more pressure on Newcastle.
It's
a no-win fixture for them, unless they absolutely hammer Sunderland. I don't think it's they are expected to win, and they're expected to win comfortably. So anything less than that is seen as a negative. And I do think, given what's happened over the course of the last few weeks, given the need for an injection of positivity, regardless of it being a derby, Newcastle have gone out in the FA Cup third round. That's the one thing that Eddie Howe hasn't been able to sort out yet. They had the Cambridge game the first year, which, fair enough, the focus was on avoiding relegation. That was Kieran Trippier's first match, and I remember him looking round and he was saying that this stadium is full, and Newcastle went out to League One opposition then. They then went out to League One opposition last season at Sheffield Wednesday, a much changed side, but a terrible performance. He doesn't have the current lofty position in the Premier League to be able to look on, or Newcastle having made the last 16 of the Champions League, or even be in the Europa League still now, or be in the semi-final of the Carabao Cup. All the focus is on this match, and if they go out of this, the only thing they have is the league, and they've got Man City and then Aston Villa away to come. So I think that there's just so much pressure on the game. It's a game I don't think that they're needed, but they have, and I know there's people inside Newcastle who are talking about they realise the importance of it. It's not just the fact that they think Newcastle have to win. They are talking about that they need to perform well. My argument would be, I mean, it's unthinkable that they don't win. Obviously, it would be great if they win in style, but that is the focus. I think that it's just unthinkable that they don't win. They have to find any way, shape, or form to get a victory, hopefully in comfortable style. But there's no guarantees, not based on form, and also the fact that it's a derby, Newcastle away from home. There's no reason why Newcastle, other than the fact that obviously they are a division higher than Sunderland and have a significantly better assembled squad and really better players, but on current form and given the context of a derby, that is a bit of a leveler, if not quite the leveler it has been in previous derbies.
I don't care. If we win, I genuinely don't care how we win that game. If the ball goes in 1-0 in off the end of Dan Burns' cock, I couldn't care less. That's it. I don't care. Don't care. As long as we win, not interested in how it happens.
I want to, before we go any further, I do want to say I love these matches and I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, I know that would put me at odds with a lot of people, but I mean, I feel sick now that we've started talking about it, because I think that goes with I just think that goes with
See?
It. Yeah, See? But I think that goes with it. You know, it's that vital, it's that feeling of vital, you know, that vital feeling. We've got to win. It's like, how much do we, you know, get to have that emotion where it's so important to us? I mean, I love it. And Yeah, I mean, my dream would be for Newcastle and Sunderland to actually be challenging in a way that Man United and Man City have done over the years. I would love that. I would love the Northeast to be at the pinnacle.
Pathetic,
I know. It makes me a weird.
Oh, I'm George Culkin. I like all the
football. No, but I just
hope everybody does.
Yeah,
well.
But I
don't
I,
be soft, man. Come that is on. How. I, That's nonsense. That,
well, okay, all right. So
I want to bury them into the ground. Right. I want us to destroy them. I couldn't.
Well, that's fine. That's fine, because actually that leads us nicely into sort of the next bit, which is something that Chris and I have done this week. And fearing that you might come up with something like that, we actually got the better-looking, funnier one from the erstwhile comedy duo, which was Taylor and Bestie podcast host. We got the better one.
Oh, has he raised his head?
Stephen Best, yeah, to meet us in a Tyneside hostelry, the Bridge Tavern on the Quayside, along with Chris Weatherspoon from Wise Men Say podcast, who's also an author, who's written an excellent book about the Ellis Short years at Sunderland, plus Phil Buckingham, who is an athletic writer but was a boyhood Sunderland fan. And we got together to chat about the match and find out how our respective fan bases were feeling.
Excellent. Well, it's well documented, isn't it, how we all feel about this game. But what was the red and white response? Here's how Sunderland fan Chris Weatherspoon reacted when the draw was made.
I was taking my daughter to a swimming lesson, and when I came out and looked at my phone, I thought somebody was taking a piss. And then I was like, oh, okay. And my initial reaction was like dread, because I think, truthfully, I think really what happened in Newcastle a little over 2 years ago has really fundamentally changed what this is now. Like, there is obviously, there's still a local rivalry, it's still a derby, but I think in terms of a competitive rivalry, I don't think we're even in the same ballpark, really. I know we're like one division apart, but really, like, I think if football wasn't a low-scoring sport, if this was like rugby or tennis where there's enough points scored that it kind of irons itself out, I don't even think we'd be having this discussion. Because I think...
It's just mind games, this.
No, it's not. It really
I'm starting
is.
To feel more confident.
honestly, it really isn't. Because, like, by rights, and I'm not... It isn't just mind game. By rights, like, we should not have a chance on Saturday. We shouldn't. Like,
if you look at someone's back four, for example, the players who's been playing the last few weeks... You've got a kid from Northern Ireland signed for like $50,000 or something. Luke O'Neill, who was a
League Two player before we signed him, yeah.
Released by Wickham and Watford, all these different clubs. I mean, Dan Ballard's a steady player.
Yeah, he's good. I mean, don't get me wrong, like I like a lot about what the team that we've got, but I just think, like, if you look at the Gulf, it's easy to like get romantic about it, go out to the Derby and it's a level playing field. I really don't think it is. Like, I mean, we've got on our side, we've got a club who doesn't staff their ticket office and can't stop the club shop. I think it fundamentally changed the rivalry, because it's kind of I actually agree with what you said before about Newcastle generally being the better side in those six games that we won, which probably what made it so nice for us. And but at least there was some kind of semblance of parity. If you add up the last 4 years of Sunderland's wage, really, you don't get to 1 year of Newcastle United's, and that's only increased. So I know it's a one-off game, so anything can happen, so I'm not saying we've got no chance, but I'm saying in my lifetime this is the biggest the gap has ever been.
Well, we just exist in different worlds now, don't we?
Yeah, it's completely,
like,
it's completely
on every level, as you say, whether it's off-field personnel, on-field spending power. It's just two clubs living in different universes now.
Yeah.
I think that's probably about right, and I don't think it's better for it, to be honest with you. I've got a problem with state-owned football clubs anyway. I don't care for it, but it's where we are. But if I don't know a massive amount about Sunderland's team, the manager Michael Beale, I've done who's at Rangers, QPR. I like Tony Mowbray. I thought when the draw was made, I thought he's canny, he's a good operator. The lads I'd speak to at work, Sunderland fans, say they're a good side, lacking a bit since Ross Stewart went.
Yeah.
What I know about Sunderland's team, management, everything, if you put them in a Norwich kit, an Ipswich kit, a Leicester kit, a Southampton kit, I think we'll beat them.
Yeah, exactly.
In a Sunderland one. Given our Sheffield Wednesday last year still lingers, Cambridge the year before that, I mentioned Birmingham a couple of times, Stevenage people were down there, Broadhill Way 10 years ago, Brighton, El Abs got had a live shoot line twice.
What do you say that?
You do without it.
The FA Cup is the one thing that the takeover sort of hasn't touched.
Yeah.
When I was
a kid, the FA Cup was, I had the videos that came out in the late 80s, and it was Newcastle, that storied FA Cup side, and you've got like kind of Beaumont Curling for the trophy in 55, and Jackie Milburn, and the original Matthews final where Matthews didn't get a kick because we're playing. And that's, again, before my dad was born, so I mentioned the Sunderland I gave him, I think, 56 there last time we played in the FA Cup. My dad's, oh God, I can't remember good numbers, it's like 67. And he hasn't seen Newcastle Peninsula in the Cup, hasn't seen them win the FA Cup. He saw them win the UEFA, well, the FA Cup, and now that's no longer recognised as a European competition. So it's, but going back to the, is it a game that we could do with or no, absolutely do without it. So I'd rather we've got Man City away. Just get a 5-0 defeat and that's it, concentrate on the rest of the season.
So where were you, how did you hear about the draw? Where were you?
I was sitting, it was WhatsApp, I was watching the draw on TV, but it was on iPlayer, so I've got that little bit of delay. And I'm feeding, I've got two young kids as well, so I'm feeding them and I'm trying to stop them from like burning the house down. And WhatsApp, I've got a few different kind of Newcastle groups that are going berserk, and I thought, surely not. Not this night, have I? So I didn't even bother watching the draw. I turned it off, went to BBC website, sure enough, oh, well, that's happening, that's just a horrible, horrible few weeks coming up.
I'll be honest, I think from like a fan's perspective in that, but from my perspective, I certainly don't speak on behalf of others, but I'm seeing there's a bit of a free hit. I don't really think we should be in with a shout. I actually think from the club's perspective, like from Sunderland, given what's gone on in the last month or so, I think it's actually a bit of a nightmare draw as well. It could be amazing, but if we're 3-0 down after half an hour or something ridiculous like that, it could be pretty disastrous.
You mean because change of manager?
I think change of the manager. I think some people wanted rid of him, but I think they expected a different replacement, or they expected the club to have more of a plan than it appeared that they did have. I think what's really peed people off though is the way the club's conducted itself around the ticketing and around what they've done, literally giving Newcastle the whole end that used to be the home end. To me, that one of the good things that we had going for us in this match was home advantage, and we haven't given that away, but we certainly haven't added to it. I mean, they've done it for money purposes, and I mean, I'm not one of these people who thinks it's funny that we're charging Newcastle fans £600 to sit in the hospitality seats, and that I think it's disgusting, and I think that's annoyed a lot of people. I know you don't, when you buy your season ticket, you don't keep your seat for cup games, but there's a lot of people who feel basically like we're kind of rolling the red carpet out for our friends up the road, which I just think is wrong. And I think if it was a narrow defeat and we play well, I think people will be okay. I think if we were to get hammered, I think that could be pretty disastrous for the people in charge of the club.
Lots of Newcastle ticketing chat this season, Chris. To what extent, though, have Sunderland bosses ceded their club's home advantage with this one? There's a lot of Newcastle fans going to be there.
There are, and I know a lot of Sunderland fans are quite irate about it. I mean, I think it's a good thing that there are so many fans able to travel. I don't necessarily like the idea of the bubble match that is there, but that is the context that's being given in. It seems to be a reciprocal deal, so if there, God forbid, was a replay in this match, then it seems that Sunderland would have a similar number of volume of fans coming up to St James's for the reverse fixture. But yeah, I know that Sunderland aren't happy with it. Some fans have been moved to accommodate Newcastle fans as well, which hasn't gone down particularly well.
But a mate of mine is really unhappy about the fact he's been booted out of his seat, and he's basically said he doesn't want a ticket for the game.
Right, that's interesting. I mean, I can understand that. I mean, I don't think that they've ceded home advantage. Yes, there'll be more Newcastle fans there, but it's still Sunderland's ground. It will still be majority Sunderland fans. Newcastle still going away from home. It will be fascinating to see, because these sides haven't met in recent memory when they've been in different divisions. This is the first time that has happened. I saw a stat earlier. I think that Lewis Miley was 9 last time Newcastle and Sunderland faced one another. So
makes me feel a bit sick, that, Chris.
Yeah, which it's 9 derbies since Newcastle actually won one. Well, it's 9 without a win. It was 10 games ago since they actually won a derby. So this is it's huge in every single way that you look at it. It's been selected for TV coverage in the UK, understandably the early TV slot on Saturday. I saw Michael Beale's press conference earlier for Sunday, and he was talking about there being national interest in this. And I think that there is, but not to that. I think there's intrigue there, but really this is already, we're midweek going into Saturday, and this match is everything that everyone is talking about, because it is so huge for the region, the area, and for both club seasons, really. It could come to define what happens for the rest of the campaign, and given the context of where Newcastle are, as I've already said, I think it is absolutely massive for Newcastle. It's a game that they have to win.
Yes, speaking of the match itself, Chris, thanks for that. Let's have another little listen to the round table, the lads from the discussion.
They've kind of frayed at the kind of trust and like support that they've had about this ticketing thing. It does seem to have really irked people. So I think if we play quite well, and obviously if we win, fantastic. If it's a narrow defeat or something like that, I think that'd be all right. I think if they were to get heavily beaten, I don't know, you can kind of see the wheels coming off a bit. The caveat to that is we have a very young team, and they seem to kind of oscillate between great and bad on a weekly basis. And so they tend not to take results from the previous week into the current week. So.
Won yesterday, didn't they?
Eh?
Won yesterday?
Exactly.
They Trying to take that.
I don't know. I think really in the grand scheme of things, I don't think it's going to be a match that really massively impacts. So, but that, I'm saying that. What are we on Tuesday? We've got 4 days for me.
Do you agree on that,
Phil? I do. I broadly agree on most of that. I do think someone will lose. It'll be a lot closer than... If you played this game 3 months ago, I think we'd get absolutely. I think the way that certainly Newcastle's sort of demise in the last 6 weeks has made it more of an attractive game for someone, but it's really hard. The first time in my lifetime the two clubs are meeting, not in the same division.
Yeah.
So it becomes very hard to predict a win for the underdog. And I think I don't think it carries a huge significance in the season. Maybe if they were to lose 5-6-7 yeah. nil or something, then if you verge into the embarrassing and the humiliation, then I think then it starts leaving a mark, doesn't it, on managers, relationships, supporters. I don't see that happening, to be honest. I think it'll be a narrow away win, and we can get back to living in different worlds again. Happily.
I wish it was already Sunday. It was Sunday afternoon. I was cooking, the game had happened, I was putting the boys to bed. Yeah, I am. A narrow Newcastle win I would take all day long. I would take a scruffy 1-0. I've got a feeling it might be a draw. Can't see Newcastle run away with it. Again, like you said, I thought the funny thing about how quickly things turn around, I saw a stat before Everton, I saw the start last month, where from the start of the Champions League up until that point, Newcastle were the best team in the Premier League on form, at most points on top, and all of a sudden now, 4 weeks, 5 weeks later, they're in the doldrums. There's polls, anyhow, 50-50, is it going to stay or go? That he shite. And it's so quick, we've kind of totally lost our club. And I said earlier, if it had been Michael Beale managing Rotherham, Coventry, Preston, the name pretty team that played recently, I'd be pretty confident. But because it's got the red and white shirt, the Sunderland badge, stadium light for all, it's going to be about the third full Newcastle fans or a quarter full. I don't feel particularly confident. Maybe it is that thing that we feel as though we've got more to lose. Cause it's a free shot, I think you said earlier on. If Sunderland get beat, it's plucky Sunderland overturned by Saudi oil run, whatever. Whereas if Newcastle win, it's massive. The people's club against, or what it seems to be, certainly my perception, against that. But the behemoth, whatever Newcastle are now. For a footballing context, I'm concerned with how tired we are. And the mistakes that are being made, I think, are born out of that tiredness. Liverpool passed through our midfield, and it's Liverpool that are going to pass through better midfields than ours. But time and time again, Anthony Gordon looks knackered.
Yeah.
Miggy's decision making is just totally gone. Again, the Sunderland fans I know, I talk to at work, at home, say they're not great in attack, I've got much as a focal point up front as much. But even then, I kind of see that and I think, oh well, 6 weeks ago we had the best defence in the world. Now all of a sudden, it looked last night as if Shearer and Botman have met for the first time. I'm dreading it. I'll take a draw. If I'm not the one to take a draw, because I'm going to do it all again. If it had been literally any one of the 90 other clubs in the Football League, Premier League, we'll take the 2-1 defeat, we'll concentrate the league, we'll get more time between games. I can't do that against Sunderland. So I think it'll be a draw. Obviously, the heart isn't saying that, but just don't get beat.
Stephen Best there, summing up our nervous energy, Chris, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be every single Newcastle fan I've spoken to has similar frustrations going into this one. I think that just the fact that it's the game, as I've already said, that they didn't really want, and that the rivalry and the sense that if they lose on this scale, that it will be an embarrassment, really, given the distance between the two clubs. So I think that until the match is over, I don't think Newcastle fans will be able, and Sunderland fans as well, they will not be able to think about much else up until that point. And during it, it's one of the things I know you've spoken about before, Taylor, where it's, you hate every single second of it. And I know so many other fans who do as well. And maybe if they're watching from home, they might be hiding behind the sofa. If they're at the game, they might have their hands in front of their eyes at certain points, or making sure they go to half.
Oh, that's what it's all about. It's what it's all about.
I would like to go to sleep on Friday night and wake up on Sunday morning. Somebody tell me the
result. But you're sort of, I mean, that gives the game away. That's why they're good. That's why we need to have these games. Because if they mean that much, we need to have them. And I know they're terrible. I know they're terrible games.
It makes me feel sick, George. I don't need that. Do you know what I mean? Football can be shit enough on its own without this sort of nonsense. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I hope that you want the atmosphere to be absolutely raw and blinding and brilliant and noisy and loud, and you want to kind of feel all those things. I also want people to be safe and find some way of enjoying it, and you know, have the rivalry, but not have hate. And I think all those things are kind of important. But these are the days, these are the days you remember. I mean, I don't remember very much, but I do remember the Ruud Gullit, Alan Shearer derby. I do, these are the games that stick in the memory, often for bad reasons. As I said before, I would like these games to mean something sort of positive. You know, I don't feel like that's around the corner anytime soon with Sunderland where they are. But that for me is, I think it's because this game is Celtic versus Rangers, but shit. I mean, I think, Celtic Rangers challenge at the top in Scotland. And so there's something more at stake than just being bad. The thing that always annoyed me about the derby, our derby, was that it had so much importance. Like Sunderland, Chris Weatherspoon said this when we chatted. He said, Sunderland were just going for 4 or 5 seasons in a row where they'd won 6 games, and 2 of those games would be against Newcastle, and they stayed up.
Yeah.
And it gave them an excuse to be shit and to go through that whole cycle of like changing managers and staying up again by the skin of their teeth. And it sort of had too much importance in that sense. But
I mean, it was 2 bald men fighting over a corn.
Well, that's
for a
exactly
long time,
it.
Wasn't it?
That's exactly it. And I mean, can you actually? I mean, the idea of Newcastle and Sunderland being at Wembley for a FA Cup final in Trafalgar Square doesn't actually bear thinking about. You can't sort of get your head around the sort of level of carnage. But the idea of actually that fixture being something positive, I think that's pretty beguiling to me.
Right then, well, we shall see, won't we? And that's about it, isn't it, chaps? Good luck to the lasses as well, by the way. We haven't mentioned them. After a remarkable unbeaten 2023, they start the new year at home against Halifax on Sunday. So get yourself down to Kingston Park for a less anxiety-inducing version of Newcastle United football. Get in touch as well at Pod on the Tyne on Twitter or X. And email us at podonthetyne@theathletic.com. That's just about it. Thanks a lot, George.
You're very welcome. See you on the other side.
Absolutely. And see you on the other side as well, Chris Wolf.
Yes, very much so. I think George and I will be travelling in convoy. We're not actually getting on the buses that Newcastle United fans have to turn up at St James's Park and get at 9 a.m, but I will be trying to get George there at a very sprightly hour, if possible.
How do you get in then? Do they fire you over the top of the stand out of a cannon or something? Is that how they do that? Bubble journalists? How does that work?
I don't know if we're segregated as well. I don't know if Newcastle and Sunderland reporters are segregated or not. We'll find out.
Not allowed to sit next to each other in case it all kicks off. Start chucking your prawn sandwiches at each other.
Segregation from Chris, that's the dream, isn't it, really? How can we do that?
We shall indeed see you on the other side. Have a good week. Enjoy yourselves. Enjoy the derby, those of you who do. And those of you who don't, well, we know how that feels. So we'll see you soon. Thanks a lot from everybody at Pod on the Tyne. Take care. Goodbye.
Fire in the disco! Richardson takes it off! A goal from the heavens for Kieran Richardson!
Come back! Oh my God! All over them! Transfer of the season! Newcastle 0, Sunderland 3!
In the OB to try to level it up on Derby Day! Absolutely perfect!
Well, back to Milner. Just in front of Owen, but it's gone in! All the way in!
Newcastle
United a level.
Change
the world. When we kiss, when we touch. Mitrovic goes for it. Mitrovic levels it. Newcastle United are back in business.
Some of the defenders left it for one another. And there's a real chance to wrap it up now for Luke. And he's taken it.
Fire in the disco.
Alan Shearer.
Shearer says, as he gets older, the feeling of scoring gets sweeter and sweeter, and that will taste very nice indeed.
Eventually, Liam O'Brien over the wall.
Here goes O'Brien. Beautifully done by Liam O'Brien. That was absolute perfection.
Waiting to Mignolet is beaten.
Your phone, is it, Chris?
It is my phone, yeah.
Is that your house phone?
Chris. My house phone, yeah. I'm trying
is that Eddie Howe calling to say something horrible to you?
Oh, it's been answered. What a shocking start.
The Athletic.